is fading out, and we are locked in. Good morning, Gloucester. It's GloucesterCast 202. We have a couple of committee members on the school committee here with us. Why don't you introduce yourselves?
I'm Jonathan Pope. I'm school committee member, chairman.
Joel Vavaza, school committee member.
We also have Sean Stellato from the 1994 Salem High football team, also an agent for several New England Patriot players, Dallas Cowboy running back Alfred Morris, and 49ers Sean Drawn. It's amazing. The story that we're going to talk about with you has me very hyped up. I saw the trailer and everything. We're going to get to you in a second. John Cahill, good high school buddy. And we used to grow up playing tennis together in East Gloucester, right behind the Pines, which we're going to get to in a little bit. And Kim Smith rounding out the cast today.
Oh, good morning, Gloucester.
Good morning, Gloucester. All right. First off, we're going to start out with our school committee members here. Hotbed. Everything to do with schools, it seems to be a hotbed. Everybody, when it has to do with children and schools and land, got good luck to everybody involved. And budgets, right?
Sure.
Right?
Money's a big piece.
Money, it would be a huge piece. And whenever we talk about school things, it always seems to be, well, why don't we just, not just school things. When we talk about projects for the city in general, people always say, well, why don't we just do that? Why don't we keep all the fire stations open? How come they're not all the time? How come we don't do this? How come not every single pothole in the city is fixed? How come we don't have 7 days a week every one of the beaches raked with the plow? How come we don't have a brand new, you know, central fire and police station? You know, how come we don't have all of these things? But, you know, as a business person, you know, and a person that manages a household, you know, I don't understand why these people just think that the money just falls out of the sky. So we have some aging elementary schools, right?
Yeah.
And we just had one that in West Parish, that a phenomenal job, that thing. So now we have all these other schools. Four other schools. They're smaller neighborhood schools, you would characterize them as, that are, you know, getting on in age. And can you describe, I don't know who wants to take this, but who can you describe how you see the current situation of what you have, and then maybe the other opposite person take what you feel are some of the potential answers?
So I'll answer what we have.
Yeah, what do we have right now? And what are the challenges, I should say?
Sure, so what we have is, so one new elementary school servicing 350 of our elementary school students out in West Gloucester. We have four remaining elementary schools that are in a race against time and competing for city resources to get themselves to a point where they can be providing services at an adequate level, at an equal level with what you have over in West Gloucester. I say race against time because, as some people may or may not know, back in 2008 when the last elementary school shakeup happened, Fuller was closed and students were dispersed throughout the remaining five. The four we have that have not been rebuilt have a lot of modular classrooms attached. Those modular classrooms have a 15 to 20 year lifespan. We are already getting complaints from DPW that some of the modulars at Beeman that are 8 years old are becoming a pain in the butt to keep up. So it's a race against time to figure out what we're going to do for a permanent solution rather than the stopgap we have. And so whatever that longer term solution is obviously has to be viewed within the context of the city's needs outside the school system. The city has other old buildings that need replacing, other upgrades it's looking to make to its infrastructure. So we have to balance what we can do in connection with what the city can do from a financial and, again, a time standpoint. We can't just one at a time slowly trickle through the next four schools over 30 years, because I don't know which school will be at the 30-year mark. And I don't know whether any of the four would realistically make it 30 more years in any sort of educationally sound or economically responsible manner. So that's what we have as far as I see it personally.
Okay. Here's a question now. Whenever it comes to the schools, everyone's immediate, well, I hear this, and I have to plead, I am completely ignorant. I have no children in the Gloucester school systems, and I have not followed what has happened in the past. So having said that, what I hear from everyone as the Band-Aid every time is, why not Fuller? Why not Fuller? Why not Fuller? Okay, so why not Fuller? And I don't know, and I have no idea why.
Well, Fuller the school or Fuller the site?
Either. Why is that off the table, or is it off the table?
Well, it's off the table at the moment because the city's in negotiations with the YMCA and Sam Parks group and another group is for the sale. So they're in negotiations. So we have said as a school committee that should the Fuller site come available, which it's not right now, we would consider it.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's the building itself is not really suitable. I mean, the building is 176,000 square feet. And if you were going to combine East Gloucester and Vets, you'd need a school about 75,000 square feet. So it's more than twice as big. Plus, it's not built as an elementary school, so it would require, to get any kind of funding from the state, you'd have to bring it to elementary school standards, and they it doesn't work very well. Mm-hmm. So it'd be an incredibly expensive to try to adapt it, because we looked at it when we did West Parish. Mm-hmm. The state made us look at Fuller to see whether it was a suitable renovation to house the same number of kids, and it turned out that it would cost almost twice as much as building a new building.
So there's the answer for all the people that say Fuller. There's a couple reasons. Number one, it's not on the table because Sam, the YMCA and that housing thing plus the YMCA is involved currently.
Negotiating.
Is still negotiating. Well, and then the other one was you already did look at it, and the numbers came back, the building, and it said, and it would cost twice as much to retrofit it to the standards that that it would be.
Yeah.
All right, very simple. Okay. So now East Gloucester and Vets.
East Gloucester and Vets.
Why don't you take this part of it?
Okay, well, the way it works is we submitted a statement of interest to the Massachusetts School Building Authority back in February, and this is a process that has been pushed back and pushed back for years because there was no money the last 10, 15 years. Mm-hmm. You know, basically since 2002, you know, we've been in, the city itself has been in contraction as far as services, as well as the schools, of course. And so the building, you know, then you had the water crisis, and then you still have all of these other things sitting over. But the idea of consolidating is, once going back to money, I mean, simply, you clearly can build one, you know, 450 student school cheaper than you could build two 225s. Mm-hmm. You know, you just need one cafeteria and one gym and one, all of those things. You need more classrooms. You need, you know, you still need to have a classroom for every kid, anybody that's in building knows the expensive stuff is the kitchens and the mm-hmm. bathrooms and all of that stuff. And the recreational room is the cheap room.
Yeah, the big wide open expanse. Yeah.
So there's that. So it's, and this, as Joel said, it's the sense of urgency, because if we were to try to build four more schools, as he said, it might take 30 years to get that done. And there's a increasing maintenance cost of all of the buildings that we have, because almost every one of them is deficient in most educational ways, and some of them have serious infrastructure problems, and we picked out East Gloucester because it's the oldest. It was built the same year as West Parish, and then we, as we studied it through, you know, we came up with the idea that to get equal access to nice facilities, we needed to accelerate the process, and that's how we came up with the consolidation issue. But
well, you, as a school committee, it's nice that you're not just have your head in the sand and pushing it off. You recognize that there's a need there, and you're starting the process.
And to be fair, you know, before coming to this decision, the school committee started before I was even on the committee last fall while we were all running for election. They started the process of going once a month to every elementary school, including West Parish, and holding a meeting, a school committee meeting there, at which time Jonathan and Dr. Sapphire would present the options for what we can do with the remaining buildings, consolidate, repair, leave them alone, hope for the best, whatever it was. And we, you know, it was attended primarily by parents at the time and staff at the various schools. And I would say, with the exception of pushback we received from some parents up at Plum Cove, whenever the topic of combining schools came up, it was well received by the teachers and the parents who were there. You know, East Gloucester, I remember a parent said, you know, we'd love to join up with Vets. We don't want to lose the flavor of East Gloucester, so as long as we can retain what makes the East Gloucester school special, we have no problem sharing it with more kids. I thought that was a great mindset to have. You know, we have something that works over here, let's provide it for more kids. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't until the plan was, you know, voted on based on this input we received that a few other people came out of the woodworks, you know, looking to kind of re-examine what we had just
Well, it's
decided.
Always like the site, right? Yeah. Not in my backyard kind of deal, right? Yeah. That's what it basically comes down to. Yeah. So what are the options right now you just described? Are there several options, or is there one option that's being put forth?
Well, like I said, when MSBA comes in, they'll first determine whether there's need. And then the process is that they give us we would enter into eligibility, which means that the city has to pull together a certain number of things, like an enrollment projections and sort of certification of funding that you're going to pay for the engineering to figure this all out, and a maintenance plan, a track record of the maintenance that you've done, and what your plan is going forward, and all those things. And then if you make the next hurdle, you get invited into feasibility, and that's when you actually start, you know, doing test borings here and there. But right now, our statement of interest says that we would consider combining East Gloucester and Vets if a suitable site was found. Now, it's been brought up that the East Gloucester school, half of it's a playground, it's a deeded playground, and really can't be built on.
Okay.
But there is some land adjacent to it which may be available. The city doesn't own it. And there's also the potential that Expressos could be taken for taxes, because they're apparently this far away. And that would give you increase the access issues at East Gloucester tremendously if that were possible. But I'm not an engineer, I'm not a designer, you know. We just can kind of look at it and say, yeah, there's enough land here.
That would seem like the best of all worlds.
And
if you could access it from East Main instead of going
through neighborhoods.
Instead of going through the neighborhoods.
Because it's a terrible,
I hate to speak for some, you know, as a guy on the waterfront that everyone always talks about what you should do with your property. I hate to speak, you know what I mean? Like, I gingerly approach that as, oh yes, we should take Expressos without any, you know, bearing to that guy or what they plan to do or whatever their situation.
It doesn't take a civil planner to look at Chapel Street and Davis Street extension and say, this probably isn't the best set of roads for parents and buses to be coming down twice a day.
Yeah, no, I hear you, because I lived at the top of Mount Pleasant, and every day, twice a day, that situation is a tough situation there.
Yeah.
And so now going over to the Pines.
Yeah. Well, there's a piece of land, and it's actually, I believe, five parcels of property that have been taken over 50 years, maybe probably longer, for taxes. I mean, there's none of the pieces of property were deeded over to the city for a specific purpose. Mm-hmm. So they're One parcel is under the auspices of the Conservation Commission, but it's not deeded. It'd be easier to, you know, I don't say it's easy. You know, we're going to get into the whole open space issue, and I believe in open space, but the bottom line is that what really needs to happen now is we need to expand this conversation and bring in the rest of the city, because there's a number of very strong proponents of keeping the pines open space, but there isn't going to be any perfect solution to any of these things. I mean, taking somebody's property is not a perfect solution, but
well, if you pay them,
yeah, right.
Nicely,
yeah.
It's not a terrible thing. I mean, I just don't know where their minds.
It's probably safe this to reiterate what you said the last thing. The only property being discussed to be taken is Espresso's. There's nothing on the table about.
Yeah.
Rumors are flying about people's houses being.
Yeah, yeah, right.
That's not anything the school committee is entertaining at this point.
Yeah.
Hopefully, will be entertaining in the future either. It's just, the Espresso's the only parcel that's been talked about as far as taking for the purpose of
access. So there's 43 acres in that parcel, and you'd need about 10 acres for a school. Okay, and the conversation has to expand to the community, because there's a lot of issues that have been brought up at the meetings we've had. One of them is what do you do with the properties if you abandon them? I mean, because we are dealing with, you know, we gave the city back Maplewood School in 2002. And I don't know if you've driven by there lately, but it doesn't look any different. We gave back the Fuller School, and they're doing whatever they're in negotiations right now.
Just so people don't understand, the school committee has these properties, but you give them back. So when you say you give them back, people may not understand that you operate independently from the city.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. The independently in conjunction with. Right?
Yeah.
In conjunction, but like, but they're not your. But when you give them back, they're not your responsibility.
The school committee tried with Fuller to. They sought to see, can we return? Can we surplus Fuller? State and the city must use it for certain purposes, and they said no. You either have control over it, or you have no control over it.
Right. So everything's owned by the city.
Yeah.
But when it's deemed to be used for educational purposes, it's under the auspices of the school committee until that day that they say we don't need it anymore.
Right.
So we don't have it. That's another thing we don't have any control over. So, but it's a concern of the people of Gloucester. What are you going to do with these properties? What are you going to do with veterans if you move out? What are you going to do with East Gloucester if you go? So that's why I keep saying that we need to expand this conversation to a citywide conversation and expand it to. We haven't heard a lot from the people that actually would be affected by this, as far as educationally, because those are people who have one-year-olds realistically.
Right, they're not. It's not in the forefront of their mind.
You know, chances of a kid that's in kindergarten actually seeing a new school is you know possible, but I wouldn't put money on it.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
I always joke. I say, you know, my son's 1.5-year-old. We're districted for Beeman, and so if we do the East Gloucester Vets first, my one-year-old will be in O'Malley before Beeman starts getting worked on, you know,
or gets
completed. So that's, you know, these people who are rushing out, worried about that their you know second grader's educational experience is going to be, you know, turned upside down from what they thought it was going to be. So well, you're going to, you know, be worrying about algebra by the time, you know,
right.
The ribbon's cut.
Well, now it's very so now can we what is the status is the are the pines conservation land or not? The area where you're talking about building this.
There's, like I say, there's five parcels there. One of them is under the auspices of the Gloucester Conservation Commission, but there are no covenants on that deed that say it has to be conservation land, which is very different than the playground at East Gloucester, which was given by the Parsons family back in the 20s. Specifically to be a playground.
Yeah, so that Smith Playground over there, that was,
those are
high, that was also.
Just like you couldn't, you know. Or there's Greenbelt. Greenbelt the city doesn't own. There's two parcels of Greenbelt land on either side of what we call the Pines. Mm-hmm. But so there's one lot there, and it covers, it's part of what we would be looking at for a school. It could be changed, but we need to have that conversation with people, because the city owns a lot of land. 5573. That's a third of the city.
But only
third of the land mass of the city is owned by the city and is open space.
But only 40 acres in East Gloucester. I learned at your meeting that only 40 of those acres are open space in East Gloucester.
But they're joined by two green belt properties, which are not owned by the city, but they're open space.
So that's not into that 40.
So what I want to
do beaches in East Gloucester.
Yeah, well, but there's so there needs to be a conversation, because that land, none of that land is preserved as open space. Swenson's Field is not preserved as open space. It's just city-owned land.
I just wonder why is it called conservation land if it's
so
not not right. I don't know.
So
I mean,
the 10-second version of that is, if I want to deed land to you and I say for use as conservation land, once you do that, you're restricted from that until essentially eternity, except for very small exceptions. You have to do the intention of what the deed says. Mm-hmm. If it's,
but this was taken.
It's just city land. Let's have the CONCOM watch over this parcel for us.
Gotcha.
And at any point, the city can go, all right, you know what, CONCOM, like, thank you for your stewardship. We're going to take it now and do something else with it.
Gotcha.
Yeah. All right. It was voluntary, not mandatory.
Well, thank you, guys. I think that wraps it up for you guys. And it's clarity, because, I mean, no more dispelling of... Yeah. Just like with the whole police thing, like people just run crazy, like by another. It goes the telephone game, by the time it gets the thing. So thank you, Joel.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Joel. You guys have a great day.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
Our next segment is something near and dear to my heart: football. And we have Sean Stellato. 94?
Yes, sir.
1994 Salem High graduate, played on a very special team.
96 graduate, 94 football season.
94 football season.
Yep.
Why don't you talk, but you're also an agent now.
Correct.
And you represent how many different NFL players?
I got about 15 in the NFL.
15? Oh, wow. Okay, because the 49ers, Sean Drawn.
Yeah.
Cowboys running back, Alfred Morris, who I had on a fantasy football team, and he was a stud. And he's blowing up for the Cowboys, right?
Yeah, he's having a good year. 2 touchdowns in 3 games, and we got a big one today against the 49ers.
And they're playing against two of your clients.
So I'll be wearing the Cowboys hat with the 49ers, probably long sleeve.
For the Patriots players, Nate Ebner, who's also, he played on the rugby team for the United States, right?
That's correct.
You represent him?
I do.
That must have been an easy sell on certain periphery stuff.
Yeah, right? It really is. You know, a lot of these sponsors are getting double market value as a rugby Olympian and to play to probably the greatest franchise in sports, the New England Patriots. His E60 life story airs Tuesday night. So we're going to be in the headquarters ESPN Tuesday morning finishing up. And then Tuesday night, get your popcorn ready, because his story is extremely captivating.
Cool.
Yeah.
But you wrote a book. It's in the second edition.
No backing down.
And I saw the trailer. We're going to put the trailer in the show notes, so
fantastic.
People will be able to, because I think that when you see this trailer, you're going to get really excited about the rest of the conversation.
Yeah.
So why don't you talk about the background for the book?
Certainly. So it's called No Backing Down. The second edition was released on July 24th. You can pick it up at SeanStellato.com. Coach Belichick endorsed it. Doug Flutie did the foreword. Mike Ditker is on the back cover. Adam Schefter, Vander Holyfield, Michael Ruzioni, CNN, 60 Minutes, just to name a few. It's kind of Friday Night Lights meets Hoosiers. It's a nonfiction high school football story. It happened in Salem, Mass. 22 years ago. And a very diverse team from all walks of life. Quarterbacks living with his dying Italian grandma. Running backs has a hardship. Our outside linebacker's mother had a substance abuse, walked in. She was passed away on the couch. Our captain's brother's legs got amputated before the season from a bacterial meningitis. So you got all these personal side stories, and all these kids are on an underdog team using football as an opportunity to cope with their personal hardships. Legendary high school coach in Ken Perrone, and all of a sudden we're undefeated, getting ready to play Swampscott, who's undefeated, and there's a major teacher strike. It shuts down the school system. Coach has two contracts, one as a teacher, one as a coach. The administration said, hey, if you coach these kids, we're going to terminate you. The union said, hey, your job description in the collective bargain agreement has no relevance to being a coach. We're blessing you to coach the kids. We just ask that you pick it and then coach after. Kids here have a possible forfeiture of the season. They break in a steal, and the school steal their equipment, stash the local field. They start having a captain's practice. Next thing you know, every major news channel's down there, 4, 5, 7, Mike Lynch, Frank Malico, Bob Lobel.
Let me just slow it down so people...
Yeah, so all of this project.
I totally hear you, but I want people to get the gist of it.
Yep.
So Salem High, undefeated season, diverse group of kids. You're going in to potentially go into the tournament.
Yeah, the Super Bowl,
right?
Yep.
And the teacher's strike.
Right in the heart of the
season. Slowing this down so people can grasp. Because for me, I like this is I loved high school. I loved sport. You know, sports. Yeah. I went and so yeah, the mindset of a kid. This is his whole life. He would cut off, you know, a limb to have a chance to play in a high school. I mean, for us, we're older. We, you know, but like to these children,
this is huge.
This is everything. Their whole life and. The administrators get involved, and they're telling this guy, if you coach, we're going to terminate you from your job. This is his full-time job.
Yeah.
So he had to make a decision.
37 years as a coach, 22nd season, teacher, coach, and he had to make a decision. And I have a lot of empathy for him and just what he did. Because at 14 to 17, you know, you think, you know, high school years are big in molding you, developing you. And you might think it's an eternity, but it's really a heartbeat in life. Mm-hmm. And those years are so precious. So for him to do what he did and draw a line in the sand and stand up to the ministry, because he could have took a knee and said, you know what, all right, I won't coach. I'll go coach. He could have coached another 20 years, been the winningest coach in Massachusetts high school history by far. And the lives that he was impacting was just, I mean, the list goes on and on. So he was looked at as a father figure to a lot of these kids. Mm-hmm. And my connection to the story is I was the quarterback of the team. Wow. So when I was living with my grandmother, who was passing at the time. So it is an amazing story. There's tremendous parallels. You know, our superintendent of schools came out publicly after he defied a live interview on John Dennis, Channel 7, compared him to Jim Jones and David Koresh starting a football cult. Wow. So let's rewind the clock back 302 years earlier to 1692. The Salem witchcraft trials, false accusations, and innocent people were put to death. And he wasn't being put to death, but in a way, he was being brought to his own gallows. Mm-hmm. And that being said, you know, we had a rally as a team, and luckily they supported us. And there are so many parallels to the story because you have the component with the, you know, side stories of the players, the coaches' journey, the small town politics, and then you've got, let's talk football, miraculous wins. We went in to play Swampscott that Saturday. They weren't allowed on the buses. The coaches weren't. We got a police escort. And last second, if you look at the cover of the book, they're running out unlocked.
Yeah.
So
I saw it in the video.
Yeah, there's 12,000 people there. Mayor shows up with bodyguards. He's getting death threats that week leading up to it. And
wasn't the whole... I have to imagine that everybody's behind this guy and the team. If you're undefeated, you have the team behind you. It's the villains.
Yes.
The school administrators. I mean, clearly the villains, right?
Yeah. Well, I believe the school committee consisted of, if I'm correct, it was seven, I believe, with the mayor, superintendent, and then I want to see. Yeah, I believe there's seven, and it was a 5-2 voted for denying him the coach. So, and I look at the five that voted, never, I don't think, ever played football in their life, to know that they wanted to have Pop Warner or coaches that come in from outside and coach us. And, you know, in baseball, you could have a pitcher that could throw 95 miles an hour and just literally, you know, strike out 15, 18 batters. Football, the schemes, the film study, knowing the certain pedigree, who goes where and here. So, looking back at that, I was very surprised, not surprised, but upset that they would try to just plug and play coaches. And this sets the tempo for the rest of your life. Like, a lot of us look back at this time, and it was a special, special time.
I don't know, like, you know, this is just put in front of me, this whole story. Like, you know, a week ago, John contacted me and stuff. And I'm not saying this because you're sitting in front of me. Like, I am so excited. I hope to God this could get. I can't wait to see. I love Hoosiers.
Yep.
All those movies, you know what I mean? Like, you know, defying the odds and everything else. I mean, this, I'm so excited, and I wish you, like, the all the luck. So wait, so now the book got picked up?
Yeah, so right now, this is exciting. So the screenwriter, who's we announced on July 22nd, we had a gala down in Salem. We had about 500 people. And John Landry Nakari was a huge sponsor on that. They provided the red carpet. It's custom made. We announced the screenwriter that night in Hollywood. He had a teaser we had put together. It was a 3-minute teaser that was phenomenal. And we announced the screenwriter and producer of Hoosiers, Rudy, and My All-American, Angelo Pizzo. So, he's writing the screenplay for this movie. So he was in town last Thursday to Tuesday, full city tour, interviews, research, and took him through a lot of the areas and the relevance and significance of the story. And yeah, he's excited to start writing. So I'm excited about it. And one of the chapters is labeled with Gloucester. You know, we talk about the rivalry of Gloucester. The 74 game with Jay Palazzolo, went into Salem in that game, and that kind of, there's relevance to how I incorporate the history of Salem football in Gloucester. So there is, for all you diehard Gloucester fishermen, fans, there's love for you guys, and hopefully, filming could be obviously filmed up here. I mean, I think I wrote a lot of the book up at Good Harbor, too.
Wow. This story has universal appeal.
Yeah, it does. It really does.
this transcends, this is a movie for anybody.
No, it is. And that's what I tell a lot of people. It's a universal story on three levels: my personal story, our team, and our coach. Yeah. And who's got behind and endorsed the book is just it's unbelievable.
you mentioned them earlier. It's a laundry list of who's who.
Yeah.
Can you describe the kids I talk to nowadays, right?
You talk to
100 kids that are seniors in high school or freshmen in college, and probably 25 of them want to be sports agents, right?
Yeah.
So can you describe to me? So can you describe to me briefly? But like, how did you get into that? And going after from there, like, how do you convince the first guy to sign with you? Like, how does that happen?
To be very candid with you, Joe, all those answers are going to be in the third book. But it's been it's a fascinating line of work. But I tell everyone in the job description, tell me about being a sports agent. I said, have you been on the Tower of Terror?
Yeah, that was my next question.
The things you get thrown at you at 3 a.m, at 8 a.m, it's crazy. But I'll tell you, there's a lot of passion behind the job. I'm very passionate about what I do. Sitting in my parents' living room, 1996, I just graduated high school. Remember, watching Jerry Maguire. And with my dad, and I was like, wow, that seems like a pretty cool. He's like, Sean, you're not going to be able to play sports forever. And, my career ended, after playing prep school, Division I football and basketball, and playing the pros. I wrapped up in late 04. So I decided, hey, I this is something. It was either going to be a coach or it was going to be an agent. Those were one of the two. And I had an opportunity to do a GA at Louisville, and my ex-arena football coach, who's the head coach of Western Kentucky, and I said, how fair is it? I want to have a family if I'm in California coaching, and next thing you know, we're moving to Idaho. And so I thought lack of stability, so I put my head down and in 2005 studied, prepared, passed the exam, and just had my third year anniversary. I had four clients in the Patriots when they won the Super Bowl, which was surreal. But it's a very cutthroat, high stakes business. When I tell you, it's I feel like I'm minimum wage in terms of the amount of hours and the travel. But it's I love what I do. I got some amazing guys in the stable, and it's hard always convincing, because guys that are unemployed, get frustrated. Why don't they have work? And you always got to...
You're the guy. You're the frontline guy.
I am the frontline guy.
And everything, like success, failure, completely on your shoulders. Yeah. Like, they are not negotiators. No. They're football players. They're training. They're learning. Everything physical and mind to become the best football player. You are the guy that gets the contracts. You are the guy that, gets them different deals.
I'm the
deals.
Guy that shows them the money.
You're the guy that shows, obviously. Yeah, but the cliche, of course, yeah. But I can't imagine how you gauge how far you can push
that envelope
without the team, say the GM, saying, just cutting off communication with you, and then you have to go face a player.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, you're tasked with getting them the best deal that they can get.
Yeah.
And but without, you know, ruining, you have to have relationships with
these. You do. It's a relationship-based business. And I take that very serious in terms of my relationships with all 32 teams and my relationship with the New England Patriots, doing, you know, more than a dozen negotiations with them. It is important, you know, you fight for your clients, because, you know, until someone proves me differently, it's football is a collision sport. And the if you look at the statistics of 3.3 years of the average player, you don't want to fit into that category, because there's never going to be generational wealth, or there's not going to be, you know, the money that you can gain. So it's important that you fight. But at the same token, you know, there's a precedent that's set in the locker room for certain, you know, guys, and where they're going to pay someone to where someone thinks that their market value is. So knowing market value is important, and just not sugarcoating anything with your clients. You know, if there's things they got to work on, if there's things that teams are saying, you got to just keep that rapport always and that dialogue going. And I just try to be real transparent with them with regards to that, and managing expectations in negotiations, because that's the big thing. Someone might look at themselves, there's a lot of players in this league that
they're getting stroked all day long, right?
All day long.
I get
stroked
it.
Stroked with a bullseye on.
Right. Yeah. I completely get it, because, you know, we have good lobster men. You know what I mean? It's everything.
Every job has certain. Yeah.
I can't imagine. So can you give me some examples outside? So the obvious is you negotiate the contract.
Yep.
Can you give me some of the examples of things that you do for your clients that people would never, like, may not know that you do?
Yeah, in terms of getting them a shoe deal, car deal, you know, certain guys, I like to find out what interests them, what they're passionate about. A prerequisite for me to represent a player is they got to be charitable. They have to want to give back to the community. And if they don't, then, you know, I'm not really, we're not a good fit, because I'm trying to get into children's hospitals, children's homes. I really think that's important, because they've been blessed to play a kid's game. Granted, it's, you know, you don't know the human element behind the player, because you don't really see that. But those are important. So really making sure their brand is grown in an organic way, that they can be appealing. And look, at New England's an exciting place with multiple states, with, you know, you got multiple fans, and there's a lot of business opportunities. So whether it's fashion shows, whether it's you know, clothing. So it's really getting to know some guys, you know, want to look like they run out of GQ. Other guys don't care. They're more of a sweats and t-shirt guy. And then you got guys that love to fish, hunt. So it's other guys like, you know, Alfred. He's very good with his finances. And he has a Mazda Miata, 1991. It's a year older than his wife. And it calls it Bentley. So he's not
really... I own the same exact car, same model. Same year, 1991. I graduated from college in 89. I had a Jeep for 2 years, then I bought a Mazda Miata.
Wow.
Red.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
That's funny.
I'm sure you got great memories with that vehicle.
I do. It was a great car.
Yeah. No, that is. So yeah, it's everyone's kind of, you know, Nate Ebner's a, you know, really unique kid. His backstory is a quiet guy, but he's an athletic freak. He was featured in Men's Fitness this month, which is a really, you know, good. We did a photo shoot in Manhattan, which was kind of cool. So Sean John, he plays the guitar. You know, Brandon King with the Patriots, he's another. So a lot of interesting guys that, you know, my DN with the Panthers, he's Jamaican and Cape Verdean, so he's big into cooking and eating. Ryan Allen, with record-breaking punter from the Patriots, he loves to cook. So it's pretty cool to learn more outside and do more outside of just, you know, playing football and strapping it up on Sundays. But it's an exciting time. You know, the league is exceptional.
You're on the cover, North Shore Magazine, on the best of North Shore. This is October 2016. Wait a second.
That's right, on the new.
That's like the new one.
Right.
No, you're the man.
You got
a hot property. We got a hot property right in here.
You know, John right there, Kyra, I think he broke the news to me that I was on the cover. I didn't even know.
That's great.
Yeah, so, yeah, you know, it's funny. My kids are... people going into Barnes and Nobles and Whole Foods and Stop and Shops and Walgreens, CVS, taking pictures and blowing my phone up. And yeah, that's great for my family. And North Shore Magazine, I'm glad they gave me that opportunity. The story's incredible. Very great magazine too. They really prestige and what they showcase and focus on. And the beauty of North Shore, I mean, it's a special, unique place.
Yeah, we've been featured there.
I see that. I see some hardware on the wall.
Yeah, we got a little hardware from there for a bunch of different things. But they but when it comes to North Shore Magazine, they are. What do you want to do?
Just ask ask how old his kids are.
Yeah, I got to I know they're probably listening right now. I got a 10 my 10-year-old just made the cast of the Boston Ballet Nutcracker, so we celebrated last night, and I got an 8-year-old gymnast who's trains same gym as Allie Reisman, and she I wouldn't put anything past her in terms of what she's going to be able to accomplish. Then I got my honey badgers 5, so I've been blessed with 3 little girls. I got, you know, my 15 little brothers in the NFL, so yeah, it's, I'm a big family guy. It's you know, I owe a lot to my parents and my wife, because, you know, they really, the support system's been off the charts.
The sky's the limit.
Yeah,
the sky's the limit.
It really is.
I'm telling you, I'm psyched for you, man. I is there a projection on the time for the movie?
You know, I would say, so I've been in talks with the biggest sports movie house in Hollywood. They want to see a first draft from Angelo. So I guess if he gets that done in 3-4 months, then from there, if it's going to be added to the slate. But I'm optimistic it will happen. You got to remember, too, you got this amazing story. You know, it's a human triumph story, and I'm a big nonfiction guy. But you also got the parallels to the story, and you got the backdrop, Salem, Mass. So that brings north of, you know, over 1 million people a year on tourism, and there's so much history there outside of just the witchcraft trials and the beauty of the city. So, and then you got potential filming of beautiful spots like Gloucester and some other areas.
Sure, man. There's, there's a million beautiful places. Yeah, so
I got verklempt when he was telling the story, and then when you were telling it, I really got
verklempt. That's great. Yeah, no, I'm excited for you, man. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Anything else you want to add in closing? Do you have a website people can check you out?
Yes, it's Sean Stellato, SeanStellato.com. So there you can learn all about me, what I do. You can get a copy of the second edition. We're constantly running events, too, in the area as well. We're going to be doing a Monday Night Football every Monday throughout the season at Tuscan Kitchen in Burlington, which you can come. The food's incredible there. Joe Farrell, great guy. And that's it. I just got honored for, I'm getting honored for 40 under 40. Boston's 40 under 40. So I'm looking forward to that. October 20th. So I promise my kids they get that Friday off. We'll spend the night in the hotel in the city. But it's exciting time, and very passionate. Just want to continue to be a role model and lead by example and do our charitable work and hopefully bring something so special to this area. I know there's been some good movies, Perfect Storm, that's been made here up in Gloucester. Hopefully we can do a little bit better than that and, you know, be a good, you know, I should say template for a lot of people that are trying to get into this business or get into the movie business and tell amazing stories. So
beautiful. Thanks for coming in, brother.
Thank you.
Be
all
well.
The best. Be well.
All right.
Take care.
All right, our third segment with the Cape Ann Chamber is back. Regular guests.
We love having them.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Why don't you introduce yourselves?
I'm Karen Ristoven with the Rocky Neck Art Colony and Cape Ann Plein Air.
There you go.
Terry McKenna, Chamber of Commerce, Events.
Events Planner? Is that what's your official title?
Events Director.
Director.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
How long have you been with the Chamber now?
2.5 years.
2.5 wonderful years.
Wonderful years.
There you go. And
indeed.
Ken.
I do anything that is asked of me.
There you go. With a smile. With a smile and a positive attitude.
Usually.
Which is very nice. Ken, you want to talk about a couple upcoming events?
I would like to, yeah, please. First of all, the content that you guys have had this morning is incredible. And that the last story, which you know we were here for the entirety, is just amazing.
It was really.
And what we're going to talk about a little bit this morning is actually a compliment to that. There's no way we're going to top it, but we have a lot going on, as usual. Just this coming week in particular, we're going to celebrate the whole summer tourism season. And so we have a tourism council, and we have a spring and a fall collaborative. So our fall collaborative is on Tuesday, and that's going to be at Schooner Adventure. The adventure is not leaving the docks. Sarah Young, who's on our board, she'll be president of the board next year, and she works at Schooner Adventure. So
Sarah Young is? Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She used to work with the Chamber. She's fantastic.
Yeah, I remember she used to work,
Yeah. So we're going to have it at her place, and no charge, max 75 people, first come, first serve. So we're looking forward to that, and talking about the summer, and a little bit about what's going on in the fall, which we'll talk about here as well. Also, that week.
And that's Tuesday,
yeah, at Schooner Adventure, 5 o'clock. We'd like you to register at Schooner Adventure or the Cape Ann Chamber, either of those websites, because we just need to keep track of people. And then on Thursday is our big game. That's our $25,000 game, where we give away literally $25,000. Top winner walks away with $10,000 that night. So it's a very big raffle. It's a tremendous amount of fun. It's at the Gloucester House.
Can I ask you a question?
Absolutely.
I don't know if I asked you this before, and I may be being redundant in my memory. Do you guys pay the taxes on the winnings? Or
taxes?
Do the person have to pay the taxes?
We pay the taxes on the raffle. Is that what you mean?
No. Does the do the person that wins, they win $25,000?
They do not.
They do not pay the taxes. If they keep the whole 25 grand.
You know, Joey.
You're not sure. Okay.
Yeah, let me not speak on that.
We won't put you on the spot there.
Good.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Good.
Sorry. Yeah. So when is the deadline on buying tickets for that?
So we'll have tickets for sale right up until that evening. So that the message here is, out of 500 tickets sold, we have 20 left.
Ooh.
So it's a very popular game, and there are not many tickets left. I've got a couple in my pocket that I'm reserving for you too.
Does that come with dinner?
It does. Yep.
Yeah, it's a good take. Every once in a while, I'm lucky enough to get out of here to go cover the drawing, and you see a lot of the same faces, because once you do it once and you go
you
there,
back
it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's standing room only at the Gloucester House.
Yeah.
We fill the room with over 200 people.
How many? Oh, so over two. And how many prizes are there outside of the 25,000?
Yeah, so there's 12 total cash prizes. The top one's 10,000. There's a 2,500. There's multiple 1,000 and 500 level awards. So there's 12 chances to win out of 500 tickets. So the odds are actually
very, very good.
And you get dinner. For the cost of a ticket, so it's really a fun night.
Mm.
So that's it on that. What we'd like to spend a little more time on this morning are really two marquee events, and the first one is actually they're both the same week. On the 13th of October is our Business Women's Fall Mixer, and we have a really fantastic speaker for this fall luncheon, and that is Adrienne Haslett Davis, and Carrie is going to talk to you about her and her story. And then we are also, that same week, we're doing a brand new event called Cape Ann Plein Air.
Get a lot of ink.
Yeah, and so you ain't seen nothing yet.
Mm-hmm.
We'll hit the papers this coming week and next week. And that's, of course, why we're here as well, to inform the community what's going on. We've been working with the arts organizations, literally as a steering committee for a year, in planning this event, meeting weekly at the chamber. This is not a chamber event, by the way. We are one of a very large and engaged steering committee that involves all of the arts organizations and the business community, as is represented by the chamber.
Mm.
So that is soon upon us, and we just want to take a few minutes and inform you and your followers as to what's going on with that, because it's an extremely important event that will spotlight the incredible arts and culture heritage that we've had on Cape Ann and what we are currently doing today. So
all right, Carrie,
that's all I have to say
away.
On that.
Okay. So the Business Women's Fall Luncheon is October 13th. It's going to be held at the Beauport Hotel this year, so we're very excited about that.
Yeah.
It's the 30th anniversary of the Business Women's Committee. It was started by Carolyn O'Connor. I don't know if you guys know her. She was
of course, yeah, Bill O'Connor, a North Shore kid.
So she's a great lady. So she started this. It's the 30th anniversary. Hopefully she's coming to the luncheon with her daughter, Allie. She's going to try to get her there for a little bit. But I guess the big news here is Adrienne Haslett Davis, who we're very fortunate to secure to have her come and speak. She, as Ken said, she was at the marathon watching it with her husband, and the story just... They took one more loop around just to see the finish line one more time, and there she was.
Bomb.
She lost her leg. She was a competitive dancer. She got a prosthetic and went on to win the championship that year.
Wow.
So since then, she's become a philanthropist. She's an inspirational speaker. She's really a neat lady with a great story. She ran the marathon this year and finished it. Took her a long time, and I think it was very painful for her, but...
We got a couple good stories, huh?
Yeah, it's great. It really is
inspiration.
Kind of
yeah,
nice melding there of having. Hopefully, Carolyn will be there. I should say back to Carolyn. We have a scholarship in Carolyn's name that goes to a woman each year who's going back to school to better herself for whatever reason, wasn't able to finish high school. After high school, wasn't able to finish college or continue on with a career goal for, again, whatever reason. It's not for a high school student. We do four other high school scholarships. It's really neat because the need is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the stories that we get on these applications is just really heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
So it's $1,250 each year. We've been doing it for, is it 30 years now?
Yeah,
it is 30 years.
Mm-hmm. and the
so some of the money that's raised for, through the luncheon goes towards that.
Yes.
Ah, yep. So another reason to go on top of all the other good
named,
reasons.
This year's recipient will be named at the luncheon.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, we're very excited about it. We still have plenty of room for people if you're interested in
Beauport. It's in one Beauport. Of those rooms at the Beauport. I mean, that's a pretty beautiful spot.
It's going to be gorgeous. Yes, we're right in the main function room, so we'll be looking.
Have you guys done any functions there yet?
We had a mixer there for the businesswomen's group, and we're doing the annual dinner there this year in January 28th.
Wow.
Yes, market dinner.
So that's when Sarah Young is going to get her. She's going to. That's her spot.
Yes, it is.
Has she announced the band yet? Is she going to have her band?
I think it's going to be Mari Martin.
Wow, that's going to be a good night.
Yes.
It is
going to be a great night.
Yeah.
It will be.
So for more information, you can get on the Chamber's website.
Yes,
right?
Let me also mention that most of the businesswomen's group kind of gets together to, it's all women, supporting women, networking with women, but for the luncheon, it's open to everybody. You know, certainly if there's a male out there that wants to come and listen to Adrienne's story, more than welcome.
And not limited to Chamber members. I mean, it's open to the entire community. Yeah.
Oh, good, that's a great point. Thanks, Ken. Mm-hmm. All right, Cape Ann Plein Air.
Cape Ann Plein Air.
Karen Ristevan's here.
Wow, this place is it's going to be rocking next week. We have 40 artists coming in from all over the country, as far away as Hawaii. There were 175 applicants for this, and this
was it judged?
It was judged.
There was an
entry juror, Colin Page, who's from Maine. He's a nationally renowned plein air painter. He was our entry juror, and he looked at all of those applications, all of the paintings, and it was a blind process, so he didn't know who they were, didn't have any bios or anything, and chose the 40 to come. We limited it to 40, plus some local alternates, and out of the 40, there are 6 who are from this area.
Wow.
So that's nice. It's really great. And
it's really nice to have some fresh perspectives, too.
Yes, exactly, and these things happen all over the country. We've never had one here, so it's the first time. Long
so
overdue.
Where's okay? I'm sorry for interrupting.
Yeah, no.
I'm excited about it. Where are you going to be able to see the stuff?
At Rockport Art Association, October 15th. That's the main date. That's the gala, awards gala. It's the end of the week, and the 40 will have been here since Monday, Columbus Day, painting for 5 days. And these people paint prolifically. This is what they do for a living. They are professional artists. And they, some of them will be producing, you know, 6 or 8 or 9 paintings, and they'll be shown at Rockport Art Association.
Is there much space over there?
There is. Yeah, there's plenty of
space. Oh, wait, you said Rockport?
Rockport.
Had Rocky Neck in
nope,
mind because you know.
Because
I was thinking of the church, and you know what I mean?
I know.
And I was thinking, 40 times 6?
Yeah,
like,
no,
what?
We don't have that kind of space.
Wow,
so they're
going
to be the main. Each one of the artists will have 3 that will be up for awards, and we have an awards judge coming in who's a different nationally renowned plein air painter.
Not from Gloucester, though.
Not from Gloucester, no. He's
thank
from
God, because I didn't have that kind of pressure.
No. We had to have somebody from out of state,
yeah,
for sure.
Smart.
Yeah, so he's going to be here for the week. He's actually going to be doing a workshop the couple of days afterwards at North Shore Art Association, but he'll be figuring out who's going to get which of many awards. We have $20,000, over $20,000 in awards to give to these artists, which is a wonderful thing.
How does that happen?
This
Who
is
gives
not,
the money? Where's that come from?
We got a lot of the money up front from Applied Materials. Ken and a couple of the other folks who started this a year ago, got some early money from Applied Materials.
Nice
and
work,
that,
Ken.
That was a major, you know, impetus to actually do it this year. Otherwise, it's usually a 2-year planning process. We're doing everything in a year because we had the money this year. We said, all right.
It's nice working with the Chamber, isn't it? It's nice working with the Chamber.
I like it. And then also, Stephen and Jill Bell from Rockport are our lead sponsors. Sotheby's is in as a lead sponsor, Glovsky & Glovsky. Lindsay and Beth Coolidge have been very generous in this regard as well.
People.
So we've got some wonderful, wonderful sponsors. And a lot of the local businesses and banks have stepped in to name awards or support some of the awards that will be given out. So it's a wonderful way for the business community to support the arts community. It's incredible. And it's not just the 40 artists who are coming. I mean, they'll be well supported by, you know, this potential to win awards, but it's all of the arts and culture of Cape Ann being sort of recognized and embraced, and this plein air tradition being embraced, mm-hmm. and you know, the level of it just kind of, you know, coming to the forefront for the week. So it's going to be great, and so I think the outfall will be amazing as well.
Oh my God.
The two dates, there's an opening reception on the Monday night, Columbus Day, which is October 10th, opening reception from 6 to 8 at North Shore Art Association. Meet the artists, they'll be in for that day, public is invited. And then there'll be a reception at Manchester at the Trask House on Wednesday. There'll be a paint out, a quick draw event in Manchester that morning.
Jeez, action!
I know. And then that night, all of those works will be shown at the Trask House for the end of the week. And then the other main public date is the gala on the Saturday night, the 15th. So.
And then Saturday and Sunday also?
And Saturday, Sunday in Essex is the, thank you, is the Paint Essex.
You don't want to piss off those Essex people.
I know.
You do not want to piss off those Essex people.
I'm a resident.
Good man.
That's actually going to be like the final big party, you know, auction sale on Sunday night at Woodman's. There'll be a Paint Essex paint out all day on Saturday, so all the artists will be there to paint and others.
The same artists
can be there, but this is open to any artist.
Okay.
Exactly. This is open to everybody. And so you can sign up with them. The information is all on the website, which is capeandplainair.com, and info to sign up for the Manchester event as well as the Essex event are there. A lot of associated events. Everybody's at
I don't know that I've been as excited for an art event.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Because it's because of all the moving parts, but like the action.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like paint off? Who does that? That's so cool. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost like sports. It's like the sporting event of art. There's action.
There is competition.
Yeah. And the fresh perspective, and like, and it's all over the place. Yeah, this is very, very cool.
So we have these wonderful program books that were produced by Art New England and New Ventures Publishing, and they are beautiful. And there's a page.
Where can you pick those up?
Each one of the artists. You can get these at any of the art associations, at the chamber,
for free?
At City Hall. They are free, and that has the basic schedule in it and a page for each of the artists who are coming. And the artists are all staying with host families. That's the other beauty of this thing.
I wonder if Joe and Maggie Rose are our host family.
Are they?
I don't have the list right here in front of me.
Because they've hosted all the people. They always host people for the
Gloucester stage.
Gloucester stage.
Well, this is a beauty. So I opened up the book, and there's Jeff Weaver's painting.
Yes.
So I'm so happy to see that he's in it as well.
Who are the other six?
The other locals are John Caggiano. Let me see if I can remember them all. John Caggiano, Ken Knowles, Janet Sutherland, Paul George is nearby, Alan Bull is nearby. Who am I missing? Those are, I think, the main locals. A lot of people... A lot of local people applied, and they'll be doing the other events, the Manchester and Essex events as well.
This book is, this is a coffee table quality keep around book. So go to the chamber or go to any of the art associations, pick up one of these for free, and put it on your. You're crazy not to put it on your coffee table. I'm taking this. Can I take this home?
You can have it.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
You got a lot of treasures today, Joe.
I know, good treasures. Karen, can you speak a little bit to the loss on Rocky Neck this past week?
Yes, on Thursday, Gordon Gedeman passed. He's been struggling with different ailments for many years, and he died peacefully on Thursday afternoon, and it is a huge, huge loss for all of us. He was a mentor to many of us. He was a sage. We would go to him for, you know, historical context and just contemporary context on everything. He was a thinker, brilliant painter, and just a wonderful, wonderful part of our community. Our artist in residence program was named for him. He founded it 11 years ago. Yeah.
Which is a very cool thing. Every year they bring in, can you explain?
We bring in artists from all over the world every year. We have a live workspace that we rent, the Art Colony rents.
Oh, that's not given to you.
No.
You pay for that space.
We pay for it. Wow. Yeah, we pay for it. And,
like Kismet Wharf.
Yep. And we have it from May to October. And for 3 months, a month each, we have three different artists come and live and work there, present their work to the public at the beginning, and then at the end of the month. and it's the most amazing time for an artist to be able to spend just working and not having to do any of their other day-to-day whatever. So it's a gift of us to them. It's a way to give that time and space to an artist that's so necessary. The other thing we started last year is for another one of our months that we rent that space, we give it to a Gloucester artist who needs to have the time. And we've had two. We've had Jeffrey Marshall last year and Phoebe Potts this year. And just the time that they can just dedicate to their work
to a local artist
is great. So we're expanding the residency program under Gordon's name and, you know, under his inspiration. We'll be expanding it over the next years.
A definite hole.
It is a definite hole, yes. Yeah, we miss him. We will miss him. We'll miss him sitting outside on his bench on the yellow.
Rocky Neck is a special place, and he, for many, I mean, I don't know how, God only knows how many years, he was an anchor there.
Yes.
So,
and our hearts are with Judy and the family.
Yeah, well, thank you for that.
Is there a memorial service?
There will be. There will be something. I believe it will be at the Cultural Center at some point, not in the too distant future.
So well, let us know.
We will let everybody know.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, thank you for asking.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, well, that was obvious. Well, there you go. Thank you guys for coming in. Anything you want to add in closing? That website, Cape Ann, Plein Air. And when you say plan, do you say plan?
Plein.
But it's PLEINAIR.com. For more information, I'm sure you have links to it on the Chamber's website. You can go there for more information on that. The Businesswoman's Fall Luncheon, October 13th, 11:30 to 1 at the Beauport Hotel. There are tickets. It's not just for Chamber members. It's not just for women. Anybody can come to this. And you have the keynote speaker, Adrienne Haslett Davis, lost her legs in the marathon bombing and went on to run a marathon this past year. And
stories this podcast.
Inspiration all over the place. Kim is all for clip.
I'm too tired.
All for clip.
With ending with Gordon like that, it's like.
It's just red like a tomato. All right, thanks for guys for coming in.
Thanks,
thank
John.
You. Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm drained right now.
Me too.
We're an hour and 2 minutes in. We got a couple more topics between the two of us.
Right,
but
very
geez,
intense.
There's a lot going on. Intense morning.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wonderful stories from people.
Great stories. We're getting better and better. I mean, we always have good guests, but we're getting some really top notch guests, aren't we?
We are.
I'm going to talk a little bit. Yesterday, what I did yesterday very quickly. We went to the Fall Fest. The Bridge Cape Ann is another website. It's kind of an advertising vehicle for a bunch of businesses in town. And they have a strawberry festival in the early summer or late spring, I'm not sure.
Early summer.
And then they have the fall festival. Yeah. It was rainy yesterday, which probably dampened it a little bit. But to be honest with you, it's a great event. And it's an event I try not to miss with my kids because they love it.
I asked the girls about it.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, and I said, were the alpacas there? And they were like, yes.
Did they tell you about the alpacas pooping for a minute straight?
Right. And so I said, you know, just come to the farm with me because they have like a whole pile there. but alpacas are very cool because they have their pen, and then they poop in a very specific area. They all go to the one little area and poop there. They don't, you know, poop by where they're eating and stuff like that.
It's so literally, they're in like a, I would say it's 10 by 10 little pen. And
They started pooping.
And there was a couple of poops on the ground that literally looked like pine cones. They looked exactly like pine cones. But then all three of them started pooping
simultaneously.
They looked like brown jelly beans. And they started coming out, and they didn't stop. We're watching and waiting for them to stop, and they just kept draining down onto the ground. Then another one started peeing, and it was just like the kids were just freaking out. It was
so much fun.
Hilarious. We're all just dying, laughing, like waiting, like it was comical, like waiting for, like, where is it coming from? Just the poop.
It was compact,
very, like the same exact size as a dark brown jelly bean, and they just kept coming and coming.
Yes, I've been filming them a lot over at Angela's farm, so I'm seeing all the. You would have loved it the other day, because the males and the females are separated.
Why?
And because the males will just have, they just want to have sex all the time. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So the females and the babies are in like a separate big pen, and then the various males are stationed around.
God
in
only, and God will help those females if they let the males mix in,
well,
if they keep
no.
them separated all the time.
No, they both want to. Do it. So,
wow.
So when I was there the other day, one of the females busted into the male section. And
did you get him on camera? Dude, getting after it?
No, because Angela is, you know, this wonderful farm lady is like racing through the pen trying to, you know, and then she
ran him in,
and she separated him, pulled the female, and this was kind of happening behind where I was standing filming. Unfortunately, I wouldn't have put that in the film anyways, because it was pretty.
No, I know you wouldn't
pretty,
have put it in the film.
Right,
it would have been great to see.
It was pretty wild, and she separated them, and you know, she explained.
So
like,
who's this Angela person? Because I thought the alpaca people were the Marshall's fan people. We got
okay.
another alpaca people.
No, it's so at Marshall's, you know where the farm stand is. There are three family businesses there.
Okay.
So Bob Marshall has Marshall's Farm Stand, which that doesn't have anything. That's a separate business from his brother Pat's landscape supply business.
Okay.
And so the landscape supply office is on one side. Then is the center building is the farm, is the produce and the farm stand. And then to the right of that, this is if you're facing it, standing on the street facing it, to the right of that is Angela and Pat's house, and then they have all the property around there with all the farm animals and stuff.
Oh, so Angela is the wife of Pat.
Of Pat,
okay.
Which is a separate business from Marshall's Farm
Stand.
Gotcha. And so she started out with just a few alpacas, but then she did a rescue of like 19 alpacas. Somebody had like an alpaca farm or
got
I can't
away
remember.
From them.
Yeah, I just got away from them.
They're letting the males and the females hang out
well,
together.
Well, so
breathing.
Now she has 23 alpacas.
Holy
so it's pretty, it's, you know, and this is just like a fun hobby that she does. Right, so she's... So
she's responsible for these alpaca lives.
Yes, and then also she has all these duck rescues that she's done, a peacock rescue. There's a beautiful peacock. His feathers are...
It's a rescue?
Yeah.
We don't have any peacocks around
well,
here.
Well, some private person had a peacock and couldn't take care of it anymore. So,
what do you do with a peacock in the winter? You got to bring them inside?
No. It's, it did beautifully last winter, and they put like a... They're putting like a barricade up on one... So they have a big square pen where the ducks and the turkeys and the peacock all live together, and they're going to put a barricade up on one side to keep the
strong. Who needs to go to Toshfield Fair? You can
right
in Gloucester. We get
right
this. We get
and
this.
It's free.
But free? They don't charge any money.
No, they don't charge any money. People just drive up there. They have a
Donna's horse up there all the time.
Yeah, they have a horse farm. Also, where they, you know, people ride horses.
I haven't brought the kids up there yet. I'm a negligent parent for not taking them up there.
Yeah, and plus they...
Do they have the stuff that you can feed, you can hand feed them or no?
No, they don't encourage feeding.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you just, they have a, you can watch them feed. They feed, they eat, when you were saying they poop all day long, they eat all day long too. They just constantly, and what's really
eat,
funny
poop
is...
and mess around.
The little baby nurses... With, because it's nursing and eating at the same time, so it'll have like a wad of hay in its mouth while it's nursing. So it's pretty funny.
Yeah, pretty primal, aren't they?
Yeah, you know what? Like they don't appear to be that affectionate. But the other day, Angela just let me go right in, like, and just stand right amongst them and film them and stuff like that. I was a little, you know, I had a little trepidation because one was just kept coming right up to me and
bite your face off.
Well, they just put their, they just kind of really, really softly nuzzle you, like really, really softly, not, and it wasn't aggressive at all, and I just really started to relax, but, you know, you never know, like, you get in between a mom and her little baby, you know what I mean, because there's Harambe, the little one that I'm filming.
Harambe?
Harambe is his name, Harumby, like Gumby, but...
I know, as opposed, Harambe was the gorilla that got killed, right, in the zoo.
Oh,
Harambe.
This
Harambe.
Oh, this is Harumby. Harambe.
Well, Harambe means, I wonder if it's from the same sort of meaning, but Harambe means to bring people together.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah.
Hmm. Oh.
I wonder where they get the name Harambe from.
She told me. I think it's some kind of funny cartoon character or something like that. There's also Magnolia. Magnolia is pure, is almost pure white. And so, but what's wonderful also about Angela's Farm is now you can buy all the yarns. So I don't know if you read the post, but you see a, you see like Dakota out in the field, and then you can buy Dakota's yarn, or you see Magnolia out there, and then you can buy Magnolia's yarn. You know what I mean? And alpaca yarn, I love knitting with that. It's beautiful. It's soft, luxurious, not itchy. Your hands feel good when you're working on it.
What's the kind of yarn that they use at the TBT post?
Don't they use that? Don't they make a lot of things out of alpaca?
Right?
I think so.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
I think so.
It's cool.
Yeah. It's really cool stuff. It's a very cool place. So, oh, you'd put that in the show notes too.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm doing.
So it's Angela's or Angie's Alpacas. That's the you can put a little
Angie's
link.
Angie's Alpacas.
Yeah. Angie's Alpacas. And she just opened a few days ago, so.
So what does she make her money on? On the shearling? The wool?
Yes, she's selling the wool now. And, well, you know, her husband has the landscape supply business. So this is like, having all the farm animals is like an extension
of that. They should
put
one of those, like the huge gumball machines that has the food that you can pay a quarter
and feed
the thing.
I don't know.
If you throw it in, don't hand feed. Afraid of biting the kids' faces off.
Yeah, I don't know.
The Lida Kuth lecture, you said there was something really cool that happened there.
Yeah, it was really fantastic. But Lida was remarking afterwards, it was like the most amazing place for her to give this lecture because Eleanor Raymond was a very modernist, way ahead of her time architect.
What years?
From between the wars, from like, later than that, 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s. And so she was very modern, way ahead of her time, like, you know, her first beautiful recorded modern house was about 5 years ahead of Walter Gropius's famous house in Lincoln. So he's considered, you know, like the father of modernism. But anyway, so what happened during the lecture was afterwards Lida said, she'd love to hear from anybody who might have known Eleanor, or because she summered here in Gloucester every summer over on Dolliver's Point. Or what is it, Dolliver's Muscle Point?
No.
Dolliver's Neck, Muscle Point. And she had a wonderful cottage with gardens. And so Lida had slides of that. And some of those buildings are still there. So then she asked if anybody had known Eleanor or... And several people did, which was really fun. But somebody in the audience got up and said that they had a whole trunk full of her architectural drawings. And they had no idea what to do. And it was just like, everybody was just
jaws
like...
Jaws dropped.
Because, I mean, it's something that would be of interest to the Cape Ann Museum, Historical New England, and, of course, Lida, because she might...
Most of these things, where were most of the drawings of? Gloucester?
She had, like, a 40-year collaborative with Amelia Peabody. So many of the houses that she designed were in this area. She also did something for Natalie Hammond from John Hammond's sister from Hammond Castle. So I think many of the drawings would be from all over the North Shore area.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so.
Very exciting.
Yeah, it was very
exciting. Catherine was there?
Yes, she was there.
Did she pee her pants? Because I can see Catherine pee her pants. This is like right in her wheelhouse. You know how she is with the Hopper tour, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And identifying places from the paintings that actually exist today.
Right.
Like,
this sounds
like it's like right in her wheelhouse as well.
Yes.
Very exciting.
It was
we'll
very
have to
exciting.
Follow up with this.
Yeah, so. I think Lida's been doing this research for the last several years because it may be a film. She may be doing a film about it. So
cool.
About Eleanor Raymond's life.
I wonder if the very philanthropic, what are those people that we just mentioned? The
Coolidges.
The Coolidge people.
Lindsay Coolidges, right. We mentioned a couple.
Because they financed a bunch of the plein air deal.
Yeah, that, I mean... That's wonderful.
How much stuff is going on around here?
Bananas,
right?
It is
this bananas. Is shoulder season. We're still crushing.
Right.
Shoulder season, right. We're still crushing.
I'm trying to finish some projects and it's hard.
Oh, my goodness.
It's difficult.
Yeah, I'm dying to do some projects too. All right, Kim. We did it. We got to an hour and 15 minutes right there. Good one.
Yeah,
I mean, solid start to finish.
Yeah.
No lag. No dip. Right. All right. For Kim Smith, this is Joey Shimatara, GloucesterCast 202 in the books.